You guys are giving me like flashbacks, like trauma as a child by describing the game. Like I haven't played it since I was a kid.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is episode 254, and today we have a special guest joining us on the show. He is a streamer on Twitch. He's a gaming YouTuber. He's played many, many games on his channel, but now he primarily focuses on Animal Crossing New Horizons. We're so glad to have him here today. His name is Kang. Kang, welcome to the show.
Woo! Thank you for having me.
Welcome. We're so glad you're here. Would you please just take a moment and introduce yourself to our viewers?
Yeah, my name is Kang. You kind of gave it away, but my name is Kang. I've been doing YouTube and content creation for over 5 years now. I started on YouTube, just doing a bunch of random things that I found interesting, like Fallout and Splatoon, whatever. Then I started streaming on YouTube, and that went very well. Then later on, actually it went very, very well. And later on, we kind of transitioned over to Twitch, where I've been mostly streaming for the last 2-3 years now. So that's pretty much the rundown. And like you mentioned, my main game right now is Animal Crossing, but we do a lot of other things as well. Whatever I think is cool, pretty much.
Have you played other Animal Crossing games in the series?
Actually, no. And New Horizons was my first ever Animal Crossing experience. So I didn't even know what to expect going in. I wasn't even going to play it. You know, everybody was all hyped and excited about it. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Let me just play it and see what it's about and see if I like it. But day one, the first day I played it, I literally fell in love with it. I was like, okay, now I see why people like this game. This is actually a lot of fun. So I was really excited to play it every single day because, you know, the game kind of flows with the real passing of time. So I was excited to play it every single day. And it's been a wild ride ever since.
It's a good intro to the series. This one's insanely good. The other ones were good, but this one's like next level. It's insane.
Do you do good. Any of those time skip, time hop things?
Time hop?
Okay.
No. It's cheating.
I just go good. Day by day. Actually, you know, that's better for content, in my opinion, because I have something new to look forward to every single day that I play the game. I don't have to rush and try to see everything all in one day and then run out of content. So I just take it day by day. Whatever happens, happens, and we just keep it moving, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So I have heard that you either proposed or got married, and Animal Crossing was a part of that, even with a gender reveal recently. Can you tell us a little bit of that?
Well, my wife and I, we were going to get married in March, but because of, you know, the pandemic and everything that was going on, we kind of had to like either postpone the wedding or just make a lot of changes to the wedding. So we decided to have like a little small wedding with just, you know, myself and her in the officiant. At a little small place that actually didn't go very well either because the officiant was late. He didn't even show up. So we were going to live stream the actual wedding, just, you know, myself and my wife and the officiant. He didn't show up. So we were just out there in the middle of nowhere, like, okay. So we actually went back home.
That's rough.
We went back home and we decided we were just going to read our vows in our living room and stream that and whatever, call it a day. Then the officiant finally called us and he was like, sorry, I had a family emergency. You can come back and do it if you want. And I was like, okay, well, we actually do have to really get married. So we need an officiant to like sign the paper. So we'll go back. We went back. He did his little thing, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. But later on, we got the idea because I was really into Animal Crossing at the time. But hey, this was in June. So they had just introduced the wedding stuff in Animal Crossing.
I remember that.
So we decided, hey, they have all this wedding stuff, all this cool stuff in the game now. Let's just put together a little Animal Crossing wedding. We'll invite some of the viewers to come be a part of it. And, you know, it'll be fun. And it was. So that was one thing that we did. Then you mentioned the gender reveal. We did that as well. Actually, no, we did the baby reveal first. My wife and I, well, my wife made a nice little room in her house that was like, you know, full of decorations and whatnot, you know, baby stuff.
So cute.
And then we recorded a little video and we premiered that live on stream to all my viewers. And they like went nuts. They were like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy, so cool, blah, blah, blah. So that was another thing that we did. And then finally, you mentioned the gender reveal. A lot of stuff. We did a gender reveal. My wife's best friend helped set it up. So she was the only one that knew the gender. This was when fireworks just was just introduced to the game. So my wife's best friend set up her island. She set up the custom fireworks to display the sex of our baby. It's a girl, by the way. So we came to the island. We looked at the fireworks, and it pretty much revealed it to us. And that kind of blew up and took off. It's been posted like all over Instagram and TikTok and on the news and everything. So it's been crazy.
That's so
congratulations
fun.
Times three.
Yeah. That's a lot. and the idea, just safer to do it that way than other alternative firework reveals.
Yeah.
That's the cutest thing ever. I'm going to have to figure out when it's time how to reveal my gender in Final Fantasy VII, since that's my game. I don't know how.
I don't think it'll be quite as cute.
Final Fantasy VII, maybe.
King, usually when we have a guest, we go through a series of rapid-fire questions. They are largely unrelated to one another, a lot of them unrelated to gaming in general. The goal is to not think too long on any particular question, but answer from your gut, answer for what feels right in the moment. Are you down for the challenge?
Sure.
All right, let's go through them. We'll start with favorites. What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Peanut butter. Anything peanut butter.
Favorite social media platform?
Twitter.
Favorite scary video game?
Resident Evil 7.
Favorite Animal Crossing game?
New Horizons, one of my play.
Favorite villager?
Probably Diana, I would say.
Favorite musical genre?
If I had to choose one, hip hop. I like all music though.
What is your favorite book?
Favorite book? The last book that I've probably read was like The Kite Runner back in like high school or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Favorite video game console?
I have a lot of fun memories of the GameCube.
Favorite too. Final Fantasy?
Favorite Final Fantasy 3 or 6, whatever you want to call it. I love that game. I play a lot.
What is a non-gaming hobby that you have?
Non-gaming hobby, photography.
What was the last TV show that you binge watched?
It was a show on Amazon Prime. It was Utopia.
Utopia. Yep. Do you prefer to sleep on your side, on your back, or on your stomach or head, whatever? How do you prefer to sleep?
On my side.
Question.
How do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
What ice cream flavor do you prefer?
You already asked.
I think we did this one.
You're right. I did. Peanut butter. What Harry Potter house are you in?
I've never seen or watched Harry Potter.
Do you like ice cream? Just kidding. It's not an ice cream podcast. And finally, which classic retro video game is so incredibly difficult that no matter how hard you tried as a kid or as an adult, you're never able to actually beat it?
Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, exactly. So join us this week as we talk about our retro game of the week, Ghosts and Goblins.
Overview.
Ghosts and Goblins is an arcade game. It was released in 1985. However, we played Ghosts and Goblins for the NES, which was released in America in 1986. The game was created by Capcom, but the NES port was developed by Micronix. So that's the variation there, but it's associated with Capcom. Capcom created this series. It's a side-scrolling platformer. Sorry, it's a classic, with a capital C, as Kenny likes to say, side-scrolling platformer. And you heard me right earlier when I said 85. It's an early platformer. It's an early NES title, for sure.
It's just an early video game.
It's an early video game. Especially like a platformer. I feel like it's like you have to know this game. You should have played it if you like love video games. But I have to be honest here. I did not, I've never played this game. This was the first time this week that I ever sat down at an arcade cabinet or at a home console to play Ghosts and Goblins.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a little embarrassed.
I played it in the arcade before. I've never played it on a home console. And then, Kenny, do you have any experience with it?
No. Growing up, I either played games because I had them or had no idea they existed. So okay. my scope is super narrow.
But you knew this one existed.
Right.
By reputation later, like since we've started doing podcasts about old games and, you know, doing research, we're seeing lists of hardest NES video games of all time and hearing people whine about, you know, this one frustrated me the most or this one frustrated me the most. Like by reputation, I learned about Ghosts and Goblins, but I haven't experienced it either, Nolan, until this week.
Now, Kang, you owned this on your NES as a kid?
Yes, I actually did. I'm not sure how I acquired it. My mom used to work in a thrift store, and that's how I got my NES. So I probably got it from the thrift store she worked at. But yeah, I played it as a kid, and I could not beat it at all. I played it over and over and over again. I could not even make it past the first level. The game was so difficult. But yeah, that was my experience with the game. But I did physically own an actual copy of the game.
Nice. Did it kind of turn you off to video games? That was like an early one that you played?
No, not really. I just, you know, put in something a little bit easier, you know, like Duck Hunt or Mario.
Fair enough.
Actually, Mario's kind of hard, too. Old
and
Mario.
I feel like as kids, we have a lot more tolerance for that. Like, I'd replay something I couldn't beat and lots of times and still have fun just playing it. And then, like, you get to the second level and you feel like a champion. You know, you don't have to beat the game. You just have to, I don't know, do better than you've ever done.
That's funny you bring that up because I think a lot of that's missing in a lot of gamers nowadays. A lot of gamers, they like give up way too easily. If something gets hard, they just want it to be easy, you know, but that old school mentality of just, you know, I'm just going to keep trying and keep trying until I get it beaten. You know, I don't see that a lot of days, you know, at least I don't hear it a lot.
Right. You've got a subset of gamers that do like that punishment type situation, right? With Dark Souls. Yeah, Nolan even likes that. Like this is the prequel to Dark Souls, by the way. And
it kind of is in tone and everything. Yeah.
So there is a subset, but yeah, generally speaking, gamers today, it's that whole time thing. Like we don't have the time to sit there and play the thing over and over. And we want that quick satisfaction, you know?
Right.
It's pervasive in everything, right? In culture and in our social media platforms and everything, but in video games today too. So I think the majority of people, we'll talk about it when we get to aged, I'm sure. A lot of people in 2020 trying to come back to a game like this where there's only six stages.
It's not long.
But you might never beat the game is a different experience.
Well, they're designing games that way too. So like in newer Mario's, if you fail too many times in a row, they give you this like star at the beginning of the stage and you're like, here, you can fly to the end.
Okay.
Or do you want to turn down the difficulty? You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's
too hard at for any you. Moment.
Like, no, it's not
I recently
hard.
Picked up a popular single player game on PC that has like a God mode button where it's supposed to be a difficult game, but if you're struggling too much, like just turn this on and you can win. And
not a fan.
I hate that. I'm like, who would ever hit that button and why are they wrong?
Here's what you're doing in this game. You're killing ghosts, goblins, and other monsters while trying to save Prin Prin.
Princess Prin Prin, please.
Princess Prin Prin from a demon lord. It's a pretty scary looking one too at that. But you use daggers, spears, other sharp objects to kill those enemies and to complete the level. So you're Dustin said there's only six stages and it's not a long game, but it's just kind of going to the right kind of platformer. Killing enemies and trying to save the day.
Did you say who she was kidnapped by? Because I'm pretty sure it's Satan.
It looks like Satan.
It's some kind of dragon, Satan something.
Yeah, I mean, he has a name. It's like, it's not Azeroth. That's something else from another fantasy game.
It is. It's Astaroth. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, that's close.
You're okay. Not far off. Astaroth. Yeah. Okay, Kang, you could have chose any game that ever existed that we haven't played so far. You chose this one. Why?
Like I said, this was a big part of my childhood, just trying to beat this game, playing it over and over again. I know how ridiculously difficult it is because I couldn't beat it. You know, I'm a gaming god. But No. I just know how difficult it is by, you know, hearing other people talk about it. So I thought it would be a pretty fun experience for you guys.
Yeah. Well, was I wrong? Thank you for making us suffer this week. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Gameplay.
So in Ghosts and Goblins, you die and then you die some more. Then you occasionally pick up a different kind of weapon to try and not die. And then you die anyways.
Yeah.
And then you find a significantly better weapon. And
then you die. You're about to say that. Okay, guess what? Yes.
Let's talk about why that's happening, though. Why is it so difficult? One, I'll throw this out there. The swarm of enemies that they throw at you, it's one of those games where, like, you've played games like this, especially on the NES, where you kill an enemy, and maybe if you go too far to the left and then go back to the right, it's respawned. Okay, that is multiplied by a million in this game, because you don't even have to go like left or right. You just kill something, and then something spawns behind you, in front of you, above you, all over.
They just keep coming, yeah.
And then it's like, okay, deal with the situation and take two steps. That's why the game takes so long to beat. So like, the swarm of enemies is too much to handle.
Something that I was proud of myself for is that I did the first play this week, and I'm not the best platformer. I'm far better than Kenny, but far worse than Nolan.
Far is a big word.
Kenny, I would love to watch you play.
Okay, far may not be a big enough word.
So I was able to, in my first play, beat the first stage, which it felt challenging. But then when I saw the comments rolling in on that video saying, oh, so that's what the end of the stage looks like, or that's what stage two looks like, or that's what the song on the first stage sounds like after 5 seconds. Like, that made me feel like I accomplished something significant. So maybe I didn't beat the game this week, but I did beat stage one.
Stage one.
You talked about it being 6 different areas, and it's split into 2 different areas of each stage.
Well said.
I'm good with words. Yeah, thank you. And in between deaths, you'll see this often. You see this kind of overworld map type thing that has the layout of where you start in that kind of open graveyard field all the way up till this castle rise. And one of the things that I greatly respected in this game is that you do have that checkpoint in the middle of each stage.
Yeah.
That's huge, because it's already difficult. If I had to start at the beginning of every stage each time, or after a game over, start at the very beginning, you know, I wouldn't have been able to play as much as I did this week. But having that checkpoint in the middle, and having the good grace that you have infinite continues and that you still start at your checkpoints, was such a, you know, a gracious, benevolent act from the developers this week.
Do you think they did that because, like, it's console? Like, was that on the arcade? Surely not, right? Because they wanted you.
No,
to put
arcades
more quarters
just eat
in.
Quarters. Like,
they just want your coins.
You can continue as many times as you have money for.
Right.
Yeah. The fact that even with checkpoints and an infinite number of continues, people consider this a hard game to beat should tell you a lot about the difficulty of it, because a lot of times you can just persevere through things. Sometimes we play games and we're like, we're playing in 2020. If we really need to, we have save states. And so this game was hard back in the day, but isn't that hard today.
Right.
This isn't that game. Even like, even cheating, you know, even giving yourself save
That's
states
true.
And unlimited continues, it's difficult, like, beyond that because of some of the mechanics. And because I don't think it's news to people, the sort of like big, you know, catch here. And that is that you beat the game one time.
Oh,
you get
gosh.
A end game screen that just says, ha ha, just kidding. That was all an illusion. And then you're asked to go back and beat the game again on like a new game plus mode. It's such a tie in where That's you have to play the game again on a more difficult, on a higher difficulty setting. That's so
yeah,
crazy.
I never even knew that. I never even
oh,
knew
really?
That. I think I may have beaten the first level maybe once ever. And then it just never happened again. But I didn't know you had to beat the game twice to get the real ending.
And that first level is the easiest of the levels you're going to see.
That's
this
like
game
a
has a pretty good ramp as you go. By the time you get to the 6th stage, the number of enemies there are, I say having watched someone else do it, not having done it myself this week, because it wouldn't have happened. This is research talking, not experience, because this game is hard. And It is punishing.
That's like a you slap in the face, though. Like, after you make it through, you're like, oh, my gosh, I finally did it. And they're like, I guess what? Okay. No, you were in a virtual reality simulation of the real game. Yep. Now you have to go actually do it. I'm like, what?
Do it again.
That's not okay. Like, you're right. That would make me turn it off for life. I would be like, I never forgive you, Capcom. I'm never going to play Mega Man or any of your other games. I'd be so offended.
You'd rob yourself of that.
Replayability, guys. We always wanted in video games.
Don't not even like give that. Me that. And I'll be honest too. I beat the second stage. I'm on stage 3.
And I'll tell you,
I can't beat it.
I have made it all the way to stage 6. The end of stage 6, right before your final boss. And I realized after trying that for a few hours that, yeah, I could do it. If I powered through and used save states enough this week, I could probably beat the game the first time. But is it worth it? Is what I came down to. Like, do I want to? So I knew that if I put my mind to it and I had the will, there was a way. But I just determined at that point after trying so long that, no, you know what? I'm not. And I'm going to beat the game by saying I'm not playing your game. And that's what I did this week.
So we've talked like big picture difficulty, and that's what this game is known for. For those who didn't play along with us or who haven't experienced it, let's talk through some of the actual mechanics. Nolan, you talked about it being a platformer. We talked about there being different weapons, but didn't really talk through those specifically. So you have a harpoon looking thing, like a jousting stick is what I assumed it was, since you're a knight.
Lance,
Yeah, you have a lance. That's the word for it. You have some kind of fireball you can lob. It looks like weird Molotov cocktails.
The game calls them torches.
Yeah, the torch.
But it's a fireball.
That you weirdly have a limited number of if you like throw. Yeah, did you ever notice this, Dustin? If the ones you've thrown haven't burnt out, you can't throw more until they do.
Probably break
like
the
on
game
screen at once.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it an armor system?
You've got the knife. Armor.
Yo, yeah, that armor's that whole thing. I mean, that we haven't even mentioned, and I know we're still going through, but like, you have 2 hits.
Yeah, it's not one hit kill. Dead. You would think it is.
Well, thank God it's not. But I wish it was more than 2.
If they had taken a page from the Mega Man playbook and given you a life bar instead of the Mario playbook of big little, or in this case, clothed naked, you might have had a little bit more time to kind of go through it. But yeah, you've got your armor on, you've got your armor off, and then you've got your flesh off, and you fall to the ground.
your skeleton next.
Flesh off.
Yeah.
Well, no, arcade, remember, like, they couldn't do that. Someone would be standing at the arcade cabinet all day. People are waiting. You gotta take turns. So, like, yeah, 2-hit kill. But it doesn't matter. Like, it's very, very, very easy to get hit because of the nature of the enemy's pathing. They're so jerky, especially flying enemies in this game, dude. They'll be, like, doing a thing. You're like, okay, I see your pattern. And then, whoop. They just hit you, and you're like, oh.
It's those red devils in particular. Yes. It's they look like red little demons with wings. The coding on those are so mean.
They're like 3 times faster than you are.
But not only are they faster, it's not like they're going in a rhythm or rotation that you can learn. You can't learn them. Yeah. They're literally dive bombing you wherever you are. That's the code. Wherever you are, attack. Wherever you are, attack. And then they've got projectiles later on as well. So like, it's just double the trouble and not double the fun.
So sometimes when you see punishing things like that or the randomly spawning enemies, I'm like, the developers were just trying to make it hard, make it replayable. You know, they weren't really being mean to you. They were just wanting to give you a big challenge, whatever else. But I don't buy that in this game. I think they're full on just being masochist because you have little stupid little gotchas. Like at the end of, I think, the 6th level, if for some reason you don't pick up a specific weapon that you don't know you have to pick up. Yeah. If you don't pick up the shield and beat the final boss of that level with the shield, it literally just pops to a screen that says, oh, you did that wrong. You've got to beat the boss with a shield. How about you try again? And pops you back and makes you replay the whole level.
Okay,
the hardest level you've
lie.
Played yet.
Wow.
For no reason. Just to artificially increase difficulty. I think somebody was cruel.
Kang, did you have a favorite weapon when you played this game, like speaking of the shield and the torch, did one of them like stand out to you as better than another one?
Yeah, probably the fire thing you were talking about. Is that a torch?
I agree. Yeah, yeah. I think it's the best. I think it has like a bigger hitbox or a hurtbox.
Knife for life for me.
Daggerkenny? That's what
so
I use.
Fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like torch.
Yeah.
Because it lingers for a second. Like it seems to be, you seem to have a higher chance of hitting an enemy with it. Maybe that was just me in my own head.
Yeah, you can just toss it out and just leave it for a little bit.
I think like there's protection. Certain enemies it was like better at. Those weird little like horned things that kind of stand there for a little while, they worked really well on. I feel like, I never got there. But when you get to the later levels, I don't think it can keep up. I think you just have to have that faster attack.
You guys are giving me like flashbacks, like trauma as a child by describing the game. Like I haven't played it since I was a kid, but now you're describing it. And I'm like, oh, I remember those flying things. Oh, my gosh. And then all the enemies. And then, oh, my goodness.
Repressed
I'm
memories. Glad. It
didn't. Playing sorry, that guys. Game as a kid, King, did that develop you into liking games that are more difficult? Or, I mean, we talked about two games this episode. We talked about Animal Crossing on one hand, and we've talked about Ghosts and Goblins, two completely different games. I wonder, I'm no psychologist, but I wonder if now Animal Crossing is your game because of the trauma that Ghosts and Goblins
the PTSD
did.
No.
Actually, I do like harder games. I like the challenge. So I'm not just an easy game guy, but I play all kinds of different games. But I like relaxing games as well. I like community games, you know, because I am a streamer. So that's why I like Animal Crossing a lot. It's relaxing. You can build a community around it. But I do like a challenging game that's actually fun as well. We talked a little bit about Dark Souls earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm not the hugest fan of Dark Souls because I kind of feel like we're the same way with Ghosts and Goblins. There's a little bit of artificial difficulty toss in there with just the wonky controls that don't have to be wonky and just mm-hmm. weird things they toss in there just to make the game harder. And it's like, this doesn't have to be that way. Yeah. Why is this that way? I don't want to play a game that's just hard because it's weird. You know what I mean?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, you mentioned Fallout as one series. Of the games you played in the past as you know, something that you streamed a little. And that one's no walk in the park for sure.
Oh yeah, no. But I mean, I've been a variety streamer for a long time, so there's literally like dozens and dozens of dozens, probably hundreds of games that I've played by now on stream and making videos for. So I mean, I can't even think of them all right now, but it's because there's so many. Any game you probably can name, I may have played it and I may have beaten it. But yeah, Animal Crossing is just the main thing right now because it's, you know, it's fun. It's just fun.
One of the things that what was most difficult to me or frustrated me was the fact that you have no control over your jump after you jump. And a lot of games, even Mario, I believe, right? You have some control. You can change directions. Yeah. You can change momentum after you jump. This is one of those games where once you're in the air, you're going that direction, you know, whether you like it or not. That's what you're doing, which... In platformers, platforming's already difficult.
It doesn't
and
feel
if
nice.
You're having to do it with the thousands of ghosts and goblins that are flying at you, it makes it just extra hard. That was probably one of my, if I could tweak one thing besides halving the enemy spawns and all of this, that would probably be the one thing that I was like, hey, let me have a little, feel like I have a little bit more control over my character so that when I fail, it's completely in my hands and not on the mechanical side of the game.
And some of those jumps you're being forced to do are blind too. You don't know what's coming up and can't see platforms. You got to just figure it out.
Like on
That's
stage three. That's where
sounds
I'm stuck.
So much fun.
It's just like, you have to have flowy controls in a platformer. Like and if I'm mid air, I want to be able to go back left and right. And so I'm glad that like the industry figured that out. I mean, Nintendo did and kind of defined the standard for that. But here it's just like, yeah, I don't like the whole locked in momentum once you jump thing.
Didn't they change the jumping mechanics in Mario 2? Like the lost levels wasn't a little bit different than the first
one? I think so. I haven't played that one very much.
And it was harder, I think, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was harder.
Man. I'm not the subset of gamers that's like, I want my games harder. I'm fine with a walk in the park. I'm an Animal Crossing kind of guy.
Oh, okay. I normally play games at like the hard difficulty, not the hardest. I don't really go for the hardest because I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I can beat the game on ultimate level. I'm like, who cares? Yeah. Who cares really? I'll play on hard. Maybe I won't play on easy or normal. I'll play on like a step above, but not like the hardest. I'm like, nobody got time for that. I'm not trying
I don't
prove
want to
anything
be punished.
To anybody. Exactly. Like, okay, if you guys want to see someone that can beat the game on the hardest difficulty without getting hit once, I'm not your guy. I don't care.
It's on YouTube. It's out there. Yeah, you can find it.
Exactly.
Aged.
So one interesting thing here, besides the whole like influence that it had on future games, like I would even say Dark Souls, like we've been saying Dark Souls some, but like I think that whole like grind of like fail, succeed, and then feel rewarding, maybe there's some influence here, sure. But something that was just from the development standpoint of this game that I found interesting, your favorite NES game was produced or directed by the director of this game. His name's Tokura Fujiwara. And
my favorite?
Huh? I think he's just saying everybody's, is he?
Everybody's favorite. What's your favorite NES game, Kenny?
I don't know.
I should have asked you a favorite question.
I'm guessing he produced a lot of games.
He produced Mega Man 2.
Okay.
DuckTales, Bionic Commando. Yeah. Like NES, this dude was involved. So
interesting.
I thought it was cool and interesting that like the taking an arcade game and bringing it to a home console, that was a new thing back then. Like very, very new. And I'm wondering, because I have my opinion on it, how do you guys feel about that transition? Because to me, this felt straight up like I was playing an arcade game all week. And arcade's not my first choice of game or console.
Yeah, I think sometimes it works. I think part of the artificial difficulty here is from its origin there. You know, like arcade games, again, we say it all the time, but they're designed to eat quarters. They're designed to make you want to come back and try again and feel like you could have beat it, even if you can't. And I think a lot of that is a remnant of this. I think if they had said, people don't need to come back and play the whole game a second time, like what a slap in the face, added two more levels and dialed back the difficulty by 30%, I think this would have been a classic that was loved like for the game it is and not for the punishing, challenging gauntlet that it is known as.
Right.
I feel like there's something to that difficulty, though. Like, I think that's part of its lasting. That's why people remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
I guess. There's a lot of people that are remembered for a lot of things that aren't good.
Yeah, you don't want to be infamous. I guess it's infamous. Not famous,
right. I don't want to be Genghis Khan. I want to be, you know, Mother Teresa. I want to be remembered for being good, not terrible.
You want to be Mario. You don't want to be the guy in Ghosts and Goblins or whatever his name is. Does he have a name?
Sir Arthur. See,
no one knows his name.
Arthur. Yeah, Kenny wants to be Mario name. Teresa. We've played games on this podcast before that we have deemed NES hard, NES difficult. I just need to clarify for those that are listening and didn't play along with us this week, this is more than that. This is, I promise you, NES difficult is difficult. That's some of the Mega Mans and some of the other games that we played. This is a step beyond that. Again, because it came from the arcade. This is arcade difficult, which I don't even know if that's a subset or a subgenre, but it's harder than the NES hard games.
I literally have that on my notes, Dustin. NES hard question mark. Try Ghosts and Goblins hard.
Like Ghosts and Goblins is a new level.
Thing. Yeah.
Do you think the game was good, like, mechanically? Because, like, when we talk about, like, Mario is, like, a standard for how video games should be. Like, when you go back to the old school Mario, they introduce small concepts throughout the first level, and then they have you do those concepts. Okay, here's an enemy. Here's one little Goomba. What do you do to that Goomba? Oh, you jump on his head. Okay, got it. Oh, here's a gap in between. What do to get over the gap? You got to jump over the gap. Okay, got it. Okay, so they introduce these little small things and they and they increase the difficulty as you progress through the game to where you get to the last levels, and it's like really hard. But they ease you in by introducing the steps without even telling you anything, that has introduced you to these concepts. Do you think Ghosts and Goblins did that?
That's a good question, because we talked nonstop about how hard it is, but is it good in design like that?
Yeah, I think comparing it to Mario is going to be tough, because that's like the perfect game at that. But Dustin, I watched your first play this week, and we have a lot of games that we jump in. They're old. We don't have the booklet, you know, that everybody used to have, and we're just completely confused and lost. I feel like you were able to figure out what you were supposed to do quickly, to figure out the mechanics relatively easily, and to kind of get it without too much difficulty. The HUD is pretty clear on what you're trying to do. The graphics are clear as to what's going on. There's mixed feelings about how they actually look, but I feel like it did a pretty good job of delivering what it tried to be. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I agree, but I think it stopped in that first section of level one. Like that natural progression that we're talking about, that you feel like rewarding and, okay, I understand this new concept. They don't really introduce new mechanics, because you move right and sometimes up and you shoot things. It comes down to player skill and being able to adapt to quick situations. Unless you know the game by memory, you're, like I said earlier, you're going to have like three enemies that you have to deal with in a quick situation. By the way, Dustin, you did a really good job on your first play. Kenny was talking about how you like understood it quickly, but I think like you say that you're not good at platformers. I think you did a really good job making it through that first stage. But in terms of progression, I don't think they did a good job in design. I think it was just an overload the whole time. And then the stages looked different, you know, like they changed the stage and that was that.
They gave you some new enemies throughout, but and the enemies do operate differently from one another. So that is impressive that there is a kind of a wide variety of enemies
and
for
bosses.
Such an early game. And bosses. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it starts difficult and then it's just
more
difficult and then more difficult and then more difficult. So yeah, I agree with everything that's been said there. When it comes to graphics, because Kenny, you mentioned graphics, I think they struggle. They're not bad. Again, 1985, 1986, I think they are good for that year, but you've got a lot of flicker. You've got some kind of slowdown as well when there's a lot going on the screen. You can expect some of that. There's not much to the backgrounds. Sometimes they're just solid colors, not even gradients or anything, just solid black or colors. But you, with your enemy variety the different pixels on your character and on each of the weapons, I thought graphically that it ages pretty well.
And I think some of that is intentional. Maybe not. Maybe I've got rose-colored glasses on and I'm just defending something I don't need to. But some of the like not as bright look, I think, is them trying to be this whole dark graveyard, you know, demonic enemies aesthetic. And I think some of that was intentional, where we get big sprites and bright colors in a Mario world. I don't think that's what they were going for here. And I'm okay with that. It definitely ends up with a palette that's a little less visually pleasing than others, but I don't mind it because I feel like it sort of fits.
Did this game come out before or after Mario 1?
Ooh, good question.
Idea.
And I know off the top of my head without Googling that it came out, oh no, right at the same time, because the initial release date of Super Mario Bros. Is September 13th, 1985, whereas this game came out September 19th, 1985.
On the arcade.
Wow.
On the arcade. NES, the NES was a little bit later.
Yeah, but it's the same game.
Wow.
Right.
Interesting.
I think I actually am a pretty big fan of the graphics here. Considering how early that is, his little run-in animation looked really good. Like his arms swinging. Like I liked that. I thought the enemy designs were all unique and kind of scary. Like the flying red guys are actually scary. So
oh, yeah,
it's like
worst.
It does a good job delivering that tone that it tried to set. Ghosts and Goblins, it has the potential to be cheesy, and it is at times. But at other times, it actually is kind of scary. And so, yeah.
Nolan, you're saying you wished you looked that good in red underwear?
That's right.
That's exactly what he's saying. Kang, when it comes to the music, do you recall any of the tracks? I'm not saying
stage
verbatim.
One.
I'm not going to have you whistle them right now. But do you, like, do you remember any of those? Did they stand out to you at all?
I don't have like any memories of them. Probably if I heard it, I would recognize it.
You would.
But that first level, I played a lot, so I probably would instantly recognize it because, you know, it would bring back all the trauma.
Sure.
Level. But yeah, it's not a classic tune that I wanted to remember, like Mario or something like that. It's like, okay, I'm going to suppress this and never bring it up again.
Yeah.
I can't tell you one either. I wasn't a huge fan of it. It's that early NES, very piercing. Yeah. Now the actual tunes themselves were good, but I was just kind of like hurting.
Yeah.
By the end of it,
I liked the music. It definitely isn't like theme song stick in your head kind of music, but again, I feel like it fits that sort of darker ambiance. Some of the sound effects were a little piercing for me, and some of even the musical things where they tried to like have those sort of like kind of horror hits were
just
a little
noises,
grindy
yeah.
on the, you know, kind of at this 8-bit style. But overall, I thought they did a really nice job with giving me some atmosphere that fit what the game was trying to go for. Not that I had time to really listen to it because I was so busy panicking and hitting buttons and trying not to die.
And crying.
We've kind of touched on it, but I do think we need to kind of come to some kind of thought here. When we're talking about aged, we're talking about gamers in 2020 who don't typically have the same kind of resilience as maybe kid gamers of early 90s. Do you think this is a game that a lot of 2020 gamers today could enjoy the punishment? Do you think that whole thing ages well?
No.
My knee-jerk reaction was to say no too, but think about Flappy Bird. That thing blew up in popularity and is mobile and is like all the things this game isn't, but was insanely difficult, and that was part of the appeal. I think there's always going to be something in people that wants to overcome a challenge. Kids these days.
I think the appeal with Flappy Bird was that it was mobile, but it also was like a challenge. You know, people were posting on social media. How far did you get? Oh, I got to the 20th pipe. Oh, how far did you get? I got to the 30th pipe. So it was kind of like a challenge amongst everybody to like try to make it further in the game because yes, it was very difficult. But it was like a social aspect to it as well. I'm not sure if a game like this would have that big of a social aspect. And Flappy Bird was cute as well. It was cute.
That's
but
right.
Hard. Ghosts and Goblins is not cute at all.
It's not cute.
And
yeah, the one kid that was bragging about his high score in Ghosts and Goblins is now the guy that's, you know, creating Flappy Bird and highly successful. Because
now kids in 2020 do have Nintendo Switches. And if they have Nintendo Online, they have access to it. With save states. So maybe
can we bring
like,
it back?
It's
can
there
we bring it
for
back
them?
And make it a social thing.
Yeah. Let's start tweeting our high scores.
Forget
about
among
high
us.
This game. Just got to beat it.
I don't, that's not, yeah.
Nope.
See how that goes.
So this game, as we've already talked about, started on arcade, then it was ported to everything, and then there were sequels. So Ghouls and Ghosts came after this, and then Super Ghouls and Ghosts, which I believe was the first one for the Super Nintendo. Yep. And then there were a few different spin-offs, different series that kind of expanded from there until we got 2006's Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins for the PSP. Finally, there were a few mobile games in the series in 2009 and 2010. So there are a lot in this. It was successful enough that they got to keep creating games in the series and even have spinoffs. So that's impressive.
Interesting. I never knew about the PlayStation, though, or the PSP one.
Yeah. Neither.
If you want a copy of the NES game, if you want the cartridge, it's only $12 used. That's not
that's
bad,
cheap.
And that would be very cool to own. But if you want it brand new, $700.
Oh, wow. My God. Is that the highest
that's
so far?
It's one of the highest.
That's a bigger jump than we usually see. Usually, if we see a game that's super popular or like that wasn't released a lot, like it's higher to get it no matter what, and then even higher. This one's got weird cult status for it's because collectors want it, but people don't actually want to play it
or open it. Yeah,
it's because all the used copies have the blood and sweat from the people that played it.
It's
and the new copies are tainted.
Yeah. So Kang, along with your peanut butter ice cream, we have a brand new cartridge coming out to you tonight. All right, no, we don't.
Brand new signed copy.
Final thoughts.
At the end of our episodes, we're going to allow each of us to give our final summary thought on the game, concluding with our guest's final words. So Kang, we'll come to you last. Kenny, the best at platformers amongst us,
by far.
Would you like to give your kind of conclusive final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm super glad we got to play this game, but only because I feel like it's a retro gaming rite of passage to suffer through it. It absolutely destroyed me, and I will always remember this game as easily the hardest NES game I've ever played. I thought maybe Top Gun, maybe Battletoads. There's some tough ones, even some others that people say are tough that I feel like I've been successful at, Bayonet Commando, Ninja Gaiden, whatever. But this is in a whole nother league and super hard game. Too hard to actually recommend that people play it for pleasure, but hard enough that it was fun to like say that I've at least tried. So that is
Nolan.
Wait, so you give a new game plus?
But no, we're not. That's not a thing.
Well, okay, but like that sounded like he normally would have said new game.
Kenny
plus.
Would not. Kenny does. He wouldn't. It's too hard for him.
Yeah, okay. I don't have to say, but yeah, if I've given less difficult games not an official status because of difficulty. So just okay. Think of that. Remember that.
I'm going to kind of like break rules here and say it's a classic, but like you don't need to play it. you just don't like it's one of those that I'm like, I guess I understand the importance and significance, but I'm not going to like just because of that, try and be like, oh yeah, it's awesome. Like I can't say that it was painful. I didn't get very far. I don't want to get far, especially if you have to beat it twice. For why? For what reason? So
why?
Yeah, I'm just going to say I did not have a blast this week. I can't say that I'm happy that I got to experience this classic. That's all I'll say.
Okay. I will say.
No,
you already did your summary.
I know, but I don't care. I've got to cut back in and ruin everything. You say beating it twice sounds daunting. I'm going to say beating it twice might be worth it, at least back in the day, just for that ending screen. Because the text that you get when you won, to me, is one of the funniest things in video gaming. I don't know if you guys read through it or saw it, but it's
read it out.
Absolutely hilarious. Let me grab it. So all of that effort beating one of the hardest video games ever and with misspellings, here is what you get. Being the wise and courageous, misspelled, knight that you are, you feel strength welling in your body. Return to starting point. Challenge again.
That's strong. The translation?
It's so bad.
Oh, yeah, that's no.
I think they never expected anybody to read it because it didn't get edited. It's the translation is terrible. And basically they say, like, good job, you win. Now go play it again just because, as if you had a good time. I don't know. It made me laugh a whole lot.
I disagree with Nolan. I think that it is a game that every retro gamer in particular should play. You might not get past the first stage. You're not going to beat it, especially without save states. I mean, this is a game that is difficult. However, with the Switch and the rewind function, like you could do some things here. You could at least get past the first stage. It is, I think, what Kenny said about like a retro rite of passage. I think that fits so well here. There's a lot of charming-ish qualities about this game that make it worth experiencing. You're probably not going to enjoy it because it's supposed to be a painful game, and you're most certainly not going to beat it, but you should definitely try it. Final thoughts there. Kang, what's your final thoughts on these, on this game?
Well, this is not a game that I had ever thought about playing again ever in my life. but, you know, I may be up for the challenge of like trying to at least get past the first level again on a stream or something. But yeah, going back to what you guys are saying, I think it is a classic game. A lot of people know about the game, but is it a game that is classical in the sense that it is widely enjoyable and people have very fun memories of it? No, not classical in that sense. It's classical because of its difficulty. It's memorable because of the difficulty. So no. Not everybody is going to enjoy it. Not everyone is going to enjoy it. I would have my son play Mario 1. I have a son. He's 5. I would have my son play Mario 1 as a classical game, and he probably would, you know, at least enjoy it a little bit. I would not say, "Hey, son, here's some ghosts and goblins." He'd be like, "What are you doing to me, Daddy? This is hard." You know what I mean?
Like, lieu of grounding him, you can make him play this game sometimes.
Yeah, this is not an example of somebody you give to someone, "Hey, this is a retro game you should play and experience," because they'd be like, "No. Give me Candy Crush. I'm fine with Candy Crush."
Right. Those are our thoughts about Ghosts and Goblins. What are your thoughts? We had many of you write in, only going to be able to talk through a few of them now. Garlisle said, "I wanted to take revenge for childhood me this week, who owned this game but never made it past stage 4. So I tried and tried and broke out rewinds on the Switch version and still could not beat it once I hit the flood of devils and trolls in stage 6. The randomness of enemy patterns combined with rarely ever having more than one hit to spare makes this game a special kind of hell, one that admittedly I still kind of enjoy. But if this had been my first experience with it this week, my response probably would have been far colder."
It's like you said, exactly. Kenny, even with cheats, it's not going to help you. Like, they designed it in a way that it's, you can't cheat even and win.
The Gaming Druid said, "This game gives me indigestion. Its difficulty is not the result of well-thought-out level design, but rather it is the product of terrible physics. The frame rate is the consistency of molasses. The fact that you have to beat the game twice in order to get the true ending is the biggest troll of all time. This is one of the only Capcom games to have next to no redeeming qualities." Wow. "No NGP here. Gonna play some Mega Man X to get the molasses taste out of my mouth."
Molasses.
No taste. Redeeming qualities?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, the graphics.
I mean, how does he really feel about the game?
Tell us, Game.
I don't think he really went into how he felt about it.
She's like talking to you anymore.
Clint wrote in. Clint, I believe, was the only one in our community that beat this game not only once this week, but twice.
Oh, he said, "No way.
I grew up playing the graveyard level of this game, and today I finally saw the second level and all the rest of them. After everyone's comments on the game this week, I wasn't sure the game would feel as fun as it did back when I was young, but the mechanics of the game shine in true Capcom fashion. Wow. I run and gunned my way through the game, not just once, but twice to reach the final credits. I certainly feel like the black sheep this time around, but I think this one is definitely worth a play."
Run and gun's a stretch.
That's a work of fiction there.
Yeah, if you want hard but rewarding, that's play Contra.
I know he streamed in Discord. Too, yeah. But I don't.
Did you say
him.
You don't believe him?
No, I think he's lying.
He's not lying.
I think he just wrote a short poem.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
She just read. I'm just kidding. I don't know the guy, so I'm just joking with you.
But you're a liar, Clint. You're a liar. The Crow 21 said, "Just hearing this title stresses me out. This game was so hard to get through. I played this 15 years ago, determined to beat it. It is 100% memorization and is just meant to kick your butt the entire time. Since I couldn't save, I just kept playing for hours, and I got further and further, refusing to shut it off, which would cause me to restart. And no way in hell was I doing that. Finally, I beat it and felt accomplished, only to have that accomplishment torn out of my soul as the game told me I had to beat it again on hard to actually win." Beat it on hard? What was this difficulty then? "I immediately shut it off. It's a good game if you enjoy a challenge, and any retro player should play it."
Wow.
And then finally, we've got Saint Minister, who said, "Fun fact, Ghosts and Goblins was developed by the descendants of a condemned 14th century cult as a contemporary form of
flagellation.
Today, it has found moderate success in developing nations as a progressive alternative to shock therapy." Okay. That's all he wrote.
Oh, it ends. Nice.
Thank you for sending in your thoughts and commentary. Thank you for all of you that played this game with us this week. It's Kang's fault, so you can write him any nasty emails at kanggaming@aol.com.
I doubt that's his email.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where all the angry ones can go.
As we put aside Ghosts and Goblins, we're going to randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. Before we do, King, out of any game that is 15 years old or older, is there any game that you think, hey, should definitely be on our list so someday we play? Anything off the top of the head?
There is this game that I used to play as a kid as well. It was like these two little bald head ninjas, like baby ninjas.
Wait, bald head baby ninjas?
Wait, what? Bakuda Upa?
And it was kind of hard too. I can't think of it. I used to play it.
Baby ninjas.
Oh man.
Was it on NES as well?
I'm pretty sure.
I guarantee you somebody.
My Google search results are gonna be weird.
Yeah,
bald head baby ninjas.
I'm scared for you. That does sound like that one game we played on the podcast,
Bakuda Upa?
That Japanese game, yeah.
What's it called?
There's no way.
Biochemical Bakuda Upa or something like that. It's Japanese.
No, that was like overtly babies. I don't think they were ninjas.
Ninjas NES.
Bald headed ninja
guys.
Okay, maybe they weren't kids. Maybe they were just like short.
The Legend of Kage. I don't know.
We'll make sure.
I guarantee you, somebody listening to this episode knows exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. They're gonna drop a note in Discord to let everybody know what game to go play.
It was like top down, so it wasn't like a platformer.
Oh, okay, that's helpful too.
Top down action going on. I don't know. But anyway. If you can find what game that is, it's a pretty cool game. It was kind of hard, too. I never really beat it, but yeah.
Our community will definitely find that out. We'll make sure that it's on the list. But right now, we're going to randomly select the game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. And it is... a game that came out in 2004. So it just barely meets our 15-year or more criteria. Yeah. It was first released for the PlayStation 2, but has since come to the PC and the Switch, as well as the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, it hasn't even happened yet. Next month, it comes out on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Should we wait?
Weird. No, we shouldn't. Okay. It is a third-person puzzle action video game developed and published by Namco. It is called... I'm going to mess this up.
Okay.
It's all right.
I believe in you.
Katamari
Damacy. This is a huge one. One of Brandon Sanderson's top 10 games.
This is that rolling thing.
Yes. Wow. This is considered retro now, which is so weird, first of all. Second of all, I think this is a very, very good game. So we'll see.
Katamari Damacy. Mispronouncing that, I'm sure.
No, you're good. That's it.
All right. Find a copy of this PlayStation 2 title. Play it along with us this week.
Let us know what you think about that game in our Discord server. We have a thriving community, and we want you to be a part of it. If you go to ngppodcast.com, you can click Join Us on Discord, and we'll meet you there.
Hey, we also want to say a big thank you to those of you who support us on patreon.com as our patrons. You help us to continue bringing you interesting and entertaining retro gaming episodes, including some awesome guests like Kang, who we are so thankful hung out with us today. Those producer level supporters are Amarlian, Austin, Ben, I'm sorry, I can't keep doing that. Bro Jim, Carrie, David, Dear Baby, Francesca, Garlisle, and Corey, our wonderful directors, Maxima, Mr. Lattes, Shauna, and Zion. You guys are the best.
Kang, where can our listeners find you online?
I'm pretty much Kang Gaming everywhere, on Twitter, on YouTube. So we have a thriving YouTube channel. It's mostly Animal Crossing stuff right now, but you know, I'm going to mix it up a little bit. On Twitch is where I stream pretty much every day. I stream twice a day, and we stream Animal Crossing, but we've also been doing some Among Us. We've been doing some Genshin Impact. We've been doing some Mario 35, We've been doing, so like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I pretty much just play whatever I want, whatever I think is cool. We've been doing some Jackbox. The new Jackbox 7 came out. So yeah, we do a lot of different things and Animal Crossing. So.
I know that you've done some scary games in the past. Do you have any scary games planned for Halloween?
Actually, I just did Phasmophobia in VR a couple of nights ago, and that
these guys are talking about trying to make us play it, and I'm so bad at scary stuff, and I hope we don't do it because I'm going to find
footage of you out there playing it.
Oh yeah, it's okay. You can go to my Twitch channel and there's a video, there's the archive. It's funny because my channel used to mainly be horror content, if you can imagine that. So we used to do a lot of horror games. So like, you know, the Evil Within, Evil Within 2, Dead by Daylight, Resident Evil, Last of Us. So we used to do a lot of that stuff. I've kind of gotten away from horror content because it's anxiety inducing.
Oh, yeah.
But every now and then, some of my viewers want to see some more horror stuff. So yeah, we did Phasmophobia recently. They probably want me to do some more stuff later. And I'm like, yeah.
No. Animal Crossing.
Maybe.
Scary.
Maybe. Maybe. If they convince me enough.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. You've been an incredible guest. Yeah, you can also find us on our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. All of those links are in our show notes. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Katamari Damacy. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
Nolan.
That's Kang, and this has been New Game Plus.